Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of not only the books that I have authored, but some articles that I have written that you might be interested in and tell you how to access them. In my broadcast, some of you have noticed that you hear very little about financial support, and that's deliberate. We really trust God here on that score and firmly believe that God pays for what He orders. Over the years, I have done a good deal of writing to prepare resources that I think should be helpful to my congregation and also helpful to you, our listeners. But on this program, I don't say a lot about those resources, much as I don't say a lot about finances, and I guess that omission in terms of resources kind of defeats the purpose. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there information describing the books I have authored. One of them co-authored with my daughter, The Finality of Jesus Christ. It's a very important book. And if anybody will let the Scriptures answer their questions about whether there are many ways to God, this will be decisive. Another very important book I've written is Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope for Punishing Times. I've written a book on marriage. Should help a lot of people if both are serious about walking with God in their marriage, Marriage Without Remorse, Rules for the Road. And finally, one about the pastoral ministry would be good for elders and leaders, too. Dispatches from the Front Lines, Reflections on the Glory and Grind of Pastoral Ministry. On top of that, on the same website, you'll see a tab that says Articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there some articles that I've produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, one of the most recent articles was my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the Scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice. After all, that has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others, but I mentioned those three. I'm not a regular blogger, but when sometimes things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these. We continue our exposition of 2 Samuel. We're in 2 Samuel chapter 3. We were last talking about the murder of Abner by Joab in verses 22 through 27. We read here that the servants of David and Joab came from a raid. They were hauling along much spoil with them in verse 22 of chapter 3. Abner, who's just leaving a parley with David in Hebron, where they agreed to bring the kingdom under one roof, David sent Abner, his former enemy, away in one piece. Well, Joab and all the army that was with him when they arrived in Hebron, the word got out to Joab that Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he sent him away, and he's gone away in peace. Joab was frosted. He came to David and he said, "What have you done? Here's Abner. He came to you, and you've sent him away, and he's already gone. You've let that guy go scot-free. Don't you know that he came to deceive you? He doesn't trust Abner because he doesn't trust himself. He's a duplicitous man, and he thinks Abner's treacherous, too. He's come in to learn of your going out and coming in and to find out all that you're doing." Actually, Joab had deeper motives for wanting to get rid of Abner. When Joab went out from David, he sent messengers after Abner. This was a ruse. They brought him back from the well of Sirah, where Abner had stopped. David knew nothing about it. The narrator wants us to know that David knew nothing about it. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab treacherously took him aside into the middle of the gate speak with him privately. Abner thought all was cool, all was well. Struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Asahel, his brother. There's the real motive. Now, there's a lot of wisdom we said we can glean from the narration of this event. We said at the end of the last program, we see in David a man who put aside personal issues for the bigger picture and the greater good. We see in Joab an example of the truth that treacherous people always suspect treachery. If we are liars, we always suspect lies. If we are cheaters and deceivers, we are likely to be the first to suspect others of cheating and deceiving. To the pure, all things are pure. To those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. Titus 1:15. There are people who always suspect the worst in others. That's because there's so much bad in them. Everybody good is a phony. That's why the world, you hear it all the time, all Christians are hypocrites. There are people who profess to be Christians who are hypocrites, no question. But why do they feel that? Because they're phonies, and they're sure you are too. Understanding this doesn't change the reality, but knowing this helps us oftentimes to explain the realities that you and I are dealing with, to be just a little more streetwise. We also see in Joab an example of the way people often hide their true motives in their actions, most especially when the fire seems greater than the fuel. When folk are too shrill, overreacting, when their outrage is greater than the bare facts seem to justify, that's a good tip-off to look for another motive. People will tell you this or that is what is driving them, but their excess in their passion is probably an indication that something else is going on. Some less than honorable motive is driving their actions other than what they are telling you. For example, that was the case with Jesus and the Sanhedrin, the Jewish Senate. They weren't worried about blasphemy when they accused Jesus of it. They weren't really worried about healing on the Sabbath day. What were they worried about? They were worried about the Romans intervening and about them losing their place and privilege, and so forth. You know, if there's one thing that I have learned in pastoring churches in all of these years, though not all of that has been pastoring, it is that when people go off like Joab, he really should have been happy that that 7-year conflict was coming to an end and the goal of a united monarchy was in sight with Abner's acquiescence. But what I've learned about folk like that is that their presentation problem, the one they come to you with, that's not usually the real issue. At least it's not the major issue. My experience has been that you will usually find some driving motive behind all their heart is something that's not honorable enough to mention out loud. Now, if we're unaware of this psychological phenomenon, we can, and I have, spent enormous time and energy trying to unwind what Jay Adams calls the presentation problem, the one they first broached, when that's not their real problem anyway. Find yourself wasting an awful lot of breath. If David could have convinced Joab that Abner was on the level, you see, Joab's spirit would still not have been becalmed. That was because his larger issue was not the fear that Abner was a spy and up to something, but his larger issue was that he was still bitter over Abner's defensive killing of his brother Asahel on the battlefield, and Joab could not let go of it. It was bloodlust that drove this cold-blooded murder. Anytime you're dealing with someone with a beef or a grievance like Joab, and you seem to be unable to pacify them or satisfy them, no matter how many apologies you make or how many good explanations you offer for your actions or how many concessions you make to their desires or preferences, if they can't get past it and get over it, that is a good clue that you're dealing with this Joabin dynamic. It's one where their issue, the presentation issue, is not the real issue. You're seeing the tip of the iceberg, and what's underneath the iceberg is something that's not necessarily flattering to mention. I remember that came out years ago in my pastorate. We had an issue. I had a couple that had joined arms with those who had an issue. It was really a bogus issue, but that doesn't matter. They had piled on with these people to come after me. It was really interesting the way things played out, because that was not their issue at all. It turned out that finally they did come to me, and the grievance that they had taken up was just a smokescreen for what now they finally revealed was their real problem. Years before that, they had had a daughter in our church who had left her husband for no good reason. I mean, maybe he wasn't the nicest guy. Maybe it wasn't the best marriage. Maybe he wasn't the best husband, but there was no biblical reason for her just to ditch her husband. Well, she had been on the platform, and she had done some piano playing for us and all of that, and that ended that. We said, she can't do that anymore. We didn't say it hatefully, but we just said, well, sorry, that can't happen. Well, after all these years, they were still carrying that grievance. That was the issue all along. Of course, we explained to them the whole deal. We had explained it to them before, but they couldn't get past it. They just held on to it, and eventually, as I expected, they left. But the point is, here they had piled on this other issue, which wasn't an issue at all with them. This was the issue, and people will do that, and you just need to be aware of that. Anytime you're dealing with somebody and you've done everything you can to explain and all of that, and it just seems like it won't go away no matter what you do, there's another issue. You can bank on it. There's something else here in the death of Abner that should not be overlooked. Do you remember way back in 1 Samuel chapter 26, David for a second time spared the life of Saul? He did it in the middle of the night. It was an occasion where David and Abishai stole into Saul's encampment. They penetrated the inner circle, and all of Saul's army, including his personal bodyguards like Abner, were sound asleep. The text does tell us back there that the Lord had caused deep sleep to come over them. And David, to show Saul once again, if you recall the text, that he intended the king no harm, that this was a wild goose chase, David showing Saul that he could easily have assassinated him if he were Saul's enemy, David and Abishai took Saul's spear and water jug as proof of their presence where Saul slept. Do you recall that David, when they retired back to the opposite hill, to his own camp, he called across the valley to Abner? David accused Abner of dereliction of duty in guarding the king and seeing to Saul's safety. At that point, David uttered a prophetic curse upon Abner for this breach of duty. He said that for this unforgivable lapse, Abner must die at some unspecified point in the future. Well, here, notice, that curse found its mark. The prophetic word proved faithful. Folks, listen to me. God never causes good men to do bad things. He never causes faithful or loyal friends to be unfaithful or disloyal. So, the deep sleep that God sent over the camp that night is silent testimony that God found something wanting in Abner. Proverbs 26:2 tells us, God does not allow a curse to light without a cause. Whatever this was justly exposed Abner to this curse. And here at last it plays out. Now this does not exonerate Joab for his treacherous and hateful action. But what it does do is remind us, again, God will fulfill his word. And God may send as his executioner someone who is less than a saint, just as he used the Philistines, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, and the Babylonians to discipline his unbelieving people. Keep things like that in mind. And God may send a nation less righteous than America to judge America's sins. Who knows? I'm not a prophet, nor the son of a prophet. But bear that in mind. Well, in verse 28, the narrator for the record makes it clear that David himself had no knowledge of Joab's nefarious actions in the case of Abner. David wanted no complicity in this evil. And as soon as David heard of it, he recognized it for what it was, a cold-blooded murder on the part of Joab. David immediately disowned Joab's actions, and he distanced himself morally from Joab. The whole bloody affair was abhorrent to David, so much so that in David's capacity as a prophet, as well as a king, David pronounced upon Joab, his relative, a heavy-duty curse, and not just upon him personally, but upon his whole bloody clan. Afterward, verse 28, when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are innocent before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. We have nothing to do with this, wanted no part of this. May it fall on the head of Joab and all of his father's house, because they were one of a kind. And may there not fail from the house of Joab one who has a discharge, or who is a leper, or who takes hold of the distaff, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle at Gibeon. It had not been in the field of battle. it had been in the spirit of a blood feud and in the spirit of complete hate. And for that, Joab would be held accountable. In verse 30, the reader is again reminded that the punishment, this curse, is not greater than the crime. For Joab was disingenuous in his professed concern about the security of David. He was hypocritical. When Abner came calling, pure and simple, it was an ambush of Abner just to settle an old personal score. It was not God's work, it was Joab's. Abner, in the heat of battle, killed Asahel, Joab's brother, in war. And even then, he did it only as an act of self-defense. Still, Joab and his pride of family and his wounded ego, when Abner proved superior to Joab's brother, he took a cheap shot, and he killed Abner just to get even. It was a sneaky and a cheap killing. It was unworthy of a battlefield Rambo like Joab, and the kind of death that dishonored the great Abner, like a housewife killing a renowned warrior. For proud and brave-hearted warriors, the great concern is not whether one lives or dies, but how one dies. This life-taking did no one any honor, either the one killed or the killer. The infamy belongs to both. There's a natural question evoked by this whole episode. David, we know, was a mighty warrior, an icon of military prowess in the eyes of the whole nation. He was no wilting flower. He could be tender, and he could be tough. He was complex. So why did he put up with Joab? Why didn't he just sack him? Well, the answer is up ahead in chapter 3, verse 39. We're not there yet, of course. There, David complained to the Lord of his, David's weakness. He complained to the Lord that, quote, these sons of Zariah are too difficult for me. Whereupon, in effect, he said, Lord, I can't manage these guys. They have me over a barrel. Will you please deal with them and repay the evildoer according to his evil? You see, for all his strengths and virtues, David recognized in particular here in the infancy of his regency that in the case of Joab and his brother Abishai, he was dealing with two hardened soldiers. These soldiers were backed by an army loyal to them, and David recognized that he was not in a strong position to sack them. For all their downsides, and they had plenty, David politically needed their loyalty, their military prowess and leadership. They were relatives, and they had been with David through thick and thin. They were courageous, and they were able military men, and they were loyal to David's interest. They presented a huge management problem, if you please. As wicked as their action against Abner was, it seemed to David that Joab and his brother were a necessary evil, one might say, to preserve order and to maintain stability in his young kingdom, especially when things were so volatile and in flux. On the other hand, David knew he could not wink at their criminal behavior either. So feeling he was in a crack and his hands were tied by circumstances, David did the right thing. Where he felt he was in over his head, he asked the Lord to deal with the situation that he felt he could not manage. Boy, there's a lesson in this for any spiritual leader. As much as we would in our idealism like for things to be tidy in, say, managing a church, as much as we would like for our staff personnel to be people we are always comfortable with, as much as we would like for the church leaders to be models of rectitude, there will be times, unfortunately, where we find ourselves in the position of David, where we're smart enough, no matter how strong a personality we may be, to recognize that our position is too weak. Our church or organization is too unstable, for whatever reasons, to power through the turbulence. We know that we've got a situation where the risk of misunderstanding and chaos is just too great to allow one with certain personnel and behaviors. I've been there. In these situations, one is torn between the fear of being a coward and the fear of being impudent and not measuring the upsides and downsides correctly and making management errors that don't solve problems but simply magnify them or compound them. I've been there. And more than once. Sometimes I'm saying the better part of valor is to eat it, as bitter as the taste is. And boy, over the course of my ministry, I've eaten a lot of it, and it's still bitter in my stomach. Sometimes we got to do just what David did. Not play the strong man, because there are too many things that can go wrong, but to turn the matter over to the Lord. There's something about leadership and pride of leadership and that kind of thing. We want to be strong and we'll step in. Boy, I did it. And sometimes we can win the battle but lose the war. And David knew that. He could have won the battle, but he had reason to fear he'd lose the war. So he did the smart thing. He wasn't a coward. He just said, Lord, I'm in over my head here. I need help. So I think I know exactly how David felt. You just want to step in, be strong, and rectify a bad situation. Many of you are like me. You hate weakness. But you know in your gut that letting your fear of being weak is a trap. And that trap may tempt you against all prudence to play it strong. So in the process, you just make a bad situation worse. Whereas, if you, like David, size things up, take a smarter measure of the situation, you humble yourself and you just say, Lord, I'm in a weak position to deal with this management problem. I could easily make matters a lot worse by trying to make them better and appear strong in the process. So, Lord, I'm just going to better step back and leave it to you to deal with those characters and their bad behaviors. We will often find in the Lord's work that we are weak and in weak positions that humble our pride in being strong. That's not all bad, folks. Remember what the Lord told the Apostle Paul when Paul had a health situation that humiliated the apostle and made him feel weaker in discharging his ministry than he wanted? After rebuffing Paul's petition for its removal 3 times, the Lord told Paul, I'm paraphrasing 2 Corinthians 12:9, you need to understand something. My grace is sufficient for your success. I want you to understand that it is from a platform of weakness that I prefer to launch my power. So get used to me putting you in situations where you feel frustratingly weak. That's the best foil, Paul, for me to work from. My grace will sustain you. And Paul said, oh my, I get it. So I'm going to glory in these weak positions that I find myself in, so that God's power may be manifest. I really understand that. Some of you may need to understand that as well as I do. So I've come to understand it because I'm just by nature wired up to do the strong thing. And it's humiliating to me to have to play it weak, just humiliating. And I think that's one reason the Lord has put me in that position so many times where I've had to do that and let the Lord work things out. Well, that's where David was. David was a strong man, but God made him into a smart ruler. He made him wise enough to understand when his tactical position was weak in terms of counteraction, and he therefore needed to curb his urge to boldly take things in hand and leave matters to God that he could not manage without messing things up more than they already were. I say again, that is so against my nature, you can't believe it. But it's one of the first excesses in my own style that the Lord targeted, and over the years, I personally have gotten a lot better at measuring what I must do and what I need to let the Lord work out without my intervention. One thing David did not fail to do is signal his absolute displeasure with the murder of Abner. He publicly distanced himself in a convincing way from the sin of his associates, and he forced Joab and his crew to join in a public lament for the slain Abner. Boy, I bet that went down hard. In accordance with cultural custom, David, verse 31, ordered Joab and all the people who were with him, tear your clothes and gird on sackcloth and lament before Abner. And David walked behind the bier, signifying publicly his personal grief and his displeasure at the taking of Abner's life. And David prescribed that Abner would be buried with honor. Boy, that must have gone down hard with Joab. Not be sent back to the east side, but buried right there in Hebron. Thus they buried Abner, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. Well, folks, thank you for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach. Be sure.